are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, as always, it's Mr. Mike Giletto Sr. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. What a great week. I hope everyone out there is doing well, and great to be back.
Yeah, it does not get much better than that. The Flyers went 3-0 this week, and we'll talk about those games in just a second. Before we do that, follow the show on Twitter, at YWT Podcast. We're there all the time. Mike's really pushing that out there, and we're really trying to get that Twitter page going, so make sure to give us a follow over there. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, SportsTalkPhilly.com. We're all over the place. You know the drill by now. All right, let's get into it. 3-0. We talked last week about those two games in Columbus being important games, and the team took care of business. The team really, really impressed me.
Yep, grabbing 4 points out of those two games against Columbus, even though Columbus got one in the overtime. But again, you're down 3-1 in that game, so getting any points was good. Getting 2 points and picking up three and picking up 3 points on Columbus and putting them, like I said before going into the game, putting them in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, really was putting them away.
Yeah, for them to catch the Flyers now, it's going to be tough. Again, a 4-point lead 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was, before the extra point for the overtime loss. Picking up 4 points over 20 games can be done. It wasn't a huge achievement, but now it's so much harder when there's so many teams to jump over. A 4-point lead is a lot bigger than it used to be, and I would be very surprised at this point if Columbus were able to put something together to catch the Flyers. So that was a huge 4 points.
Yeah, and we are, you know, looking at the standings, and that's going to be a big theme for today's show because it's, you know, it's that time of year.
Well, before we hit the standings, let me give you a little stat. 2 weeks ago, I looked at it. The Flyers' chances, all these different sites put out the percentages, chances of making the playoffs.
Right. It was somewhere in the 65% range.
It was like 57, depending on the site, but it was in the high 50s. This morning,
85.
I saw 82. Okay.
Okay, I was guessing. I didn't see anything.
Okay, got you.
Oh, no, I didn't see anything. I was just guessing.
Yeah, 82%.
Yeah, well,
I mean, that's huge.
When you put together your first three-game win streak since early December.
Right. And it also goes to a little bit, and we'll pat ourselves on the back here a little bit of credibility to what we were saying last week about this week, how important it was if you were able to grab those 4 points and then combining that with a win against Winnipeg, we thought how important it was going into the week. We proved to be right. You went from 57% to 82% to make the playoffs in 1 week. That's huge.
Yeah, and the Flyers have definitely put themselves in a really good spot. Looking at the standings, the Flyers are 3 points out of first place in the Metro.
If you said a month ago the Flyers are going to be 3 points behind Pittsburgh and the Caps for first place, I would have said, look, get your orange Flyers colored glasses off. It's not going to happen.
I'm pretty sure I did say that, and I'm pretty sure you did say that.
They have. If you did, I definitely did. But they are more likely now to catch the Caps and or the Penguins. Probably one, not both, but they're probably more likely to catch one of them than to miss the playoffs, and that's phenomenal. That's fantastic.
I would definitely say that's the case. And
100%.
Washington has struggled a little bit recently.
Yeah, they have. No, they've definitely come back to the pack. As much as the Flyers have chased it and gained points, Washington's come back to us a little bit, for sure.
They've definitely fallen off that pace that had them challenging Boston for the President's Trophy. Washington and Pittsburgh are now a full 10 points behind Boston in that race.
And we just talked about how big 4 points was.
Yeah.
There's either Tampa or Boston is definitely going to be the President's Trophy winner in the East, no doubt about it.
It's a two-horse race for the President's Trophy at this point in time because Boston has 90 points. Tampa has 85. And then no other team has more than 80. Pittsburgh, Washington, St. Louis, Colorado all have 80 points. I'm sorry, Colorado has 79. I'm sorry. Pittsburgh, Washington, St. Louis all have 80 points, 60, 61, 62 games played.
Right.
They're not making up 10 points in 20 games, not correct. How good Boston's been.
Correct. And look, and for all the talk about that race is over, and it is, now we can talk about what's the meaning of that. Obviously, as you saw last year, it meant nothing.
Right, because now we start to wonder, is Boston running out of gas? Are they going to get swept in the first round type of thing? Do they
you know, they did play for a long time in the playoffs last season. They're starting to put a lot of games on their bodies with not a whole lot of rest. And you're coming down to the playoffs, and you're going to hit the first round, and if the gas tank's empty, the playoffs don't care. You're done.
Yeah, and the difference in teams from the 8 seed to the 1 seed isn't really – it's not a huge disparity. The NHL has achieved much more successfully than baseball or basketball has, and basketball will never have it, that NHL formula – I'm sorry, the NFL formula of parity. NFL loves parity, and, you know, the 9-7 team is almost – you know, at least can compete – you know, with that, you know, 12-14.
They're often one or two blown penalty calls away from being, you know, 10-6 teams.
You've seen 9-7 teams win the Super Bowl. 10-6 teams, you know, wild card win the Super Bowl. You see it happen.
I just had to take that little sideways shot at NFL officiating.
No, I understand. I understand. So, you know, you can see, and it happens in hockey a lot now. It happened last year where the A seed not only beat but swept the 1 seed.
Right.
So they've achieved a lot more parity than maybe that existed 15, 20 years ago when you had the Islanders and the Oilers, you know, winning multiple three, four in a row. The Canadians won four in a row. The Islanders won four in a row. The Oilers won 4 out of 5. So you're not really going to see much of that anymore. Even the Blackhawks most recently, as good as they were, winning 3 in 6 years, I think it was, I don't think they ever went back to back.
No, and we saw the Pittsburgh Penguins win back to back a couple of years ago.
Right.
And other than that, for a while, the Kings and Blackhawks kind of traded cups.
Right.
But nobody's gone three or four in a row. Right.
Right.
No.
So they've achieved. And look, and I think it's great for the sport. I mean, the formula in the NFL clearly works. You know, as many teams vying for the title as possible is what sparks the most interest.
Well, I do hate to break it to you, but the 3-point system does help with the parity.
It does. It does. 100%.
And I know you hate the 3-point system, and we've talked about this in the past, and, you know, they're not going to change it anytime soon. So there's really no use complaining about it. But the 3-point system does really help. And, you know, on that note, looking at the rest of kind of the playoff race, you have the Islanders and Carolina currently sitting in the wild card spots with 74 points. Columbus is just outside, also with 74 points. And then don't sleep on the Rangers. They're only 4 points out of that race.
Right, but the Flyers have back-to-back games coming up with them that, you know, that should prove, hopefully, fatal to the Rangers.
Yeah, we looking ahead slightly to this week, we have San Jose on Tuesday. That's a non-divisional or a non-conference game against a team that's not going to make the playoffs and could very well unload several of their pieces by tomorrow's trade deadline. We are going to get into tomorrow's trade deadline a little later on in the show. San Jose could be an entirely different team by Tuesday. They could be without Joe Pavelski. They could be without several other major pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then after you run through them, theoretically, you have a home and home with the Rangers on Friday and Sunday. And that playoff, that's not quite as big a series as the Columbus series was.
No, and it's nowhere near as big to the Flyers as it is to the Rangers. The Rangers, way bigger to the Rangers. That's one of their weeks that they got to get four points to have any prayer of getting to the playoffs.
But if you do to the Rangers what you just did to Columbus,
correct,
beat them once in regulation and then once in overtime.
Yeah, you're sticking a fork in them for sure.
Right. Then you are ending the Rangers and taking them out of the playoffs.
Hopefully we do to them and their young hot goalie what we did to Columbus's young hot goalie. What was his name again?
Yeah, Elvis Merzlikins.
Rhymes with Schmorschen.
Yeah, Elvis Merzlikins.
I'll never remember his name. That's crazy.
He is officially human.
Yeah.
And that'll get us. Let's get into last week's games. Tuesday night, I was in the building. I knew how big a game it was. Tickets got way too cheap, in my opinion, for how big the game was. So I picked up a pair, and we went down to the game. And boy, it was a fun one. 3 minutes and 28 seconds in, Kevin Hayes from Joel Farabee and Travis Konecny. 4.5 minutes in, Couturier from Giroux and Voracek. And man, you are going to hear that sentence a lot because the top line came alive.
Yes, they did. It was great. Great to see.
The big boys are here to play.
Yep. Yep.
And it's something we have all been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks. When are they going to turn it up? When are they going to start hitting the gas? Here we go.
Yeah, I was very much of the opinion watching most of that game, like, wow, this is the best game the Flyers have played all year. And then then I came off that. And the reason I came off it is, and I'm not taking anything away from the Flyers by saying this, they played a great hockey game in a crucial, important time.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Showed up from the drop of the puck. When it got to be 2-0 and 3-0, and even in the third period when it was, what, 5-1? Where was the pushback from Columbus?
No, they yeah, I agree with you. They kind of rolled over and died.
Yeah, I'm not saying they played a horrible game early. They really didn't.
No.
But once, you know, as critical as that game was to them, once you fall behind 2-0, and then especially at 3, you got to do something. Somebody's got to get smashed against the boards. Somebody's got to get, you know, somebody's got to start a fight. You got to, they had, as the game went on, they had less and less and less energy.
Well, and those first two goals, Kevin Hayes, the weird bounce from underneath the red line. He banked it off the goalie's back. It deflected off the stick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're not going to talk about whether he did it on purpose or not. We argued about that a lot off the air. I don't think it was very productive.
Hayes definitely did it on purpose, and he told you that. So we won't even talk about that one. If you want to talk about Kootz's, we can. But go ahead.
And then Sean Couturier either gets stick checked in a very, very fortunate fashion, or he pulled the Kucherov no move, Deke. I'm sure you've seen it by now. If you haven't, please go look it up.
Yeah, definitely go look at it.
Absolutely worth your time.
Yep.
I really genuinely want to hear people's opinions on if they thought
he
did it on purpose or not.
Mike, producer Mike, put a poll up. Was that intentional or not intentional? There you go.
And then in the second period, we had Phil Meyer score. But yeah, those first two goals, strange circumstances, either a no move or a weird stick check with a roll that rolled in the net. Kevin Hayes, you know, it bounced off the goalie's back. Two weird goals. You're on the road 5 minutes into the game. The crowd is loud. Yeah, and Columbus kind of snapped.
Yeah, and I guess and I get that it kind of sets you back or you kind of makes you reset. And you always don't always get that reset in a positive way. But especially a team coached by Tortorella, who's a very emotional, fiery, you know, rah-rah kind of guy. They just didn't seem to have any pushback at all. Well, great for the Flyers, you know. Or look, maybe I didn't see any pushback. You know, maybe the Flyers just played so well they couldn't get any pushback. And look, they're up against it. They don't score a ton of goals to begin with. I just didn't think physically and energy-wise. It almost like they said they shut it down and we'll get them Thursday. And they did come out Thursday flying.
9 seconds into the game, Oliver Bjork, 41 seconds into the game, I'm sorry, Oliver Bjorkstrand.
Yeah, and even the first 5 to 10 minutes, even though the Flyers got back in the game fairly quickly after it was 2-0, they clearly were, okay, this is Custer's last stand. We're giving it everything we got. They were hitting, they were skating, they were flying, they were doing everything I expected them to do after being down 2-0 in the first game, and they just didn't.
Right, it was a bit of a delayed reaction on the pushback.
But terrific response by the Flyers.
Absolutely.
Terrific response.
You see, after Oliver Bjorkstrand scores 41 minutes in, Nick Foligno scores
41 seconds. 41 seconds.
41 seconds in. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Nick Foligno scores shortly after 9 minutes in.
Great move.
Yeah. It was a great move.
Terrible play by Provorov. Love him. You're a great Provy. Nothing terribly being said about you, but that was just an awful play. You can't swing at puck and miss player and allow breakaway. But once
it was pretty bad.
Once he got the breakaway, tremendous move.
Yeah, he made the move right around Brian Elliott's stick. Yeah. Between he went legs, for the poke check. Top shelf.
The poke check was actually very well done. And if Foligno doesn't do what he does, he definitely gets poke checked. He puts the puck back between his legs and just a tremendous goal.
And I won't
blame Elliott for the poke check. He if Foligno doesn't do what he does, he definitely gets the puck, and it's a great play.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, to the Flyers' credit, 23 seconds later, Travis Konechny.
Yep.
Bang, bang, bang. You come right back down the ice and really kind of deflate the tires a little bit.
Correct. Because they're, you know, if they go into that intermission up to, you know, or even carry the play further the rest
of
the
period. Right, even further in the first period.
Go out 2-0, 3-0, end the period. You know, the game gets that much more difficult. So to be able to go get that balancing level goal, play the rest of the period, and even Steven and get out of there 2-1, that's huge. That's huge.
And
how many big goals has Travis scored this year?
He scored a lot.
If he has enough big goals that you would think he has 40 goals. It seems of the number of goals that he has, a very proportionately high number of those goals are big goals. like important goals.
Sorry, for a second, I didn't know if you were talking about Travis Konecny or Kevin Hayes, because he's the same way.
Yeah, true of both of them. True of both of them.
It seems like every goal he scores is clutch, shorthanded, late in a game, down by one, up by one, you know, some impressive spot. Kevin Hayes doesn't score a boring goal.
Yep, no, this is definitely true. And goal scoring as a whole for the season, and certainly for the last month, has just been terrific. They're getting goals from multiple different areas.
As we see later on in this one with Nick Obey-Kubel potting his fifth of the year.
Yep, they're really, you know, they've scored 206 goals this year. I mean they've scored 15 goals less than Tampa. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah,
if you remember early in the season when the record was going well, we kind of talked about, well, gee, why? Well, goaltending, and I'm not going to say the goaltending's been bad the last month, but it's not been what it was the first month.
But it hasn't needed to.
It hasn't. It has. What it says, what's carrying them now.
And Carter Hart was out for a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And he was very good again yesterday.
Yes.
But the reason that they're continuing to now go from 7 games over .500 to 15 games over .500 has equally been as much about goal scoring defense as well. They're defensively a much better team than they were under Hextall, but that's just a given, and we all know that. But the number of goals they're scoring is equally the reason why they've continued to win and stretch their games over .500 percentage over, equally important to the goaltending now.
Yeah, and we see, and we talk about it coming from everywhere.
The return of?
Flyers only have one player with 20 or more goals.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yep.
But then they have an additional 1, 2, 3, 4 with 17 or more.
Yep.
So, you know, by the end of the year, you expect Claude to score 3 more, JVR to score 2 more, Hayes and Couturier to score 1 more. So theoretically, we're going to end up with at least five guys over that 20-goal threshold.
Yeah, and the guy that I really think's really, really picked it up, and not necessarily that he's been on fire for any particular given stretch, but if you look at where he was the first 15 to 20 games of the season and where he is now, is James Van Riemsdyk. He's up to 18 goals.
Yeah.
You know, he scored a sick one yesterday through his legs.
Yep.
Seems to be a growing trend in the NHL now, stick between your legs and score a goal. But that was a terrific goal, important goal too.
Yeah, and out of him, for James Van Riemsdyk in particular, I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass on those first 15 or 20, because for me, that's him learning Alain Vigneault's system.
I know you're big on that.
I'm willing to give him that as a pass, given how good he's been since in his role.
In hindsight of having played 60 some games now, I'm a little more receptive to that argument than I was in the first 20 games. So yeah, I'll give you that one.
Okay. And
he said begrudgingly.
Oh, totally. I know how hard you had to grit your teeth to give me any sort of credit. But talking about guys who are really playing well in their role, can we take a second and talk about the quote unquote fourth line?
It's
Scott Laughton, Michael Roffel, and Joel Farabee. Or not even Michael Roffel all the time. It's Laughton and Farabee.
Here's how good their fourth line has been, okay? Who's their third line? Who's their fourth line?
I
have no idea. That's how good they've been.
And Alain Vigneault has talked since day one about everyone's kind of going to play.
Right, right.
And we're seeing everybody play.
I would say the Aubé-Kubel line technically is the fourth line.
Yeah,
and they've been so good at times that there have been a few games here and there where they're down 2-0, 3-1, and I'm like, man, we got to have this. I want to see Aubé-Kubel's line more.
You know what it is?
I actually feel that in the middle of a game at times. That's tremendous.
You know why it's a good fourth line? Because they don't need to play all the time. Some guys need to play every third shift to stay in the rhythm of the game.
True.
They don't need that.
Some guys can
come out. They are the modern day version of an energy line. Back in the day, that line would come out and hit a superstar and pick a fight and blah, blah, blah. And today they throw a couple clean body checks. It's about
energy.
Nice, hard
energy.
Forecheck.
Yep. Energy.
Puck possession and rotation and speed. And they only have to do it two or three times a period.
Yep. You know, they're a little bit like some racehorses. If they get stuck in the starting gate, and they have a hard time getting out. They're done for the race. Their line is like that horse that when that happens, they dart out of the gate. They fly and they just take off. So it's almost like when they're on the bench for, you know, a few minutes and they're just dying to hit the ice. As soon as they hit the ice, they're just bing bang.
They're raring to go.
Exactly.
Pinballing off everybody.
Exactly. And they're like that racehorse that likes to jump out of the gate when they're a little stuck, not take a seat back.
And you know what? That's exactly what this team needs.
Yeah, 100%.
You have the smooth skill with Claude and Jake and Coots and, you know, some of the skill guys. You have kind of that gritty strength along the wall with Kevin Hayes. You need somebody banging and crashing and doing what Braden Schenn did for the Flyers when he was here, doing what Scott Hartnell did for the Flyers when he was here. Yep. And I don't think Nick Obey-Kubel is as talented as those players, but he's serving a similar role. He's filling a similar function. And that whole line is as a unit.
Yeah, and what I like more about this line, you know, if a few years past, we had, who was the French guy who played, who's now in Vegas?
Are you talking about Pierre-Edouard Belmar?
Yeah, line. They were fully content with playing well defensively in their zone and not giving up a goal and chipping the puck out.
Clear the puck, get off the ice.
45 seconds, get off the ice. This line doesn't want to do that. This line wants to play the 45 seconds in the offensive zone.
And I'm willing to give Alain Vigneault a lot of credit for that.
You just stole my thunder. That's I think Vigneault 100% gives them the permission.
He plays
aggressive. Go do the best defense is a good offense approach. So yeah, no,
and and it all comes back to the goaltending. You have to be able to trust your goaltender to let the rest of your skaters go that deep. Your forwards and your defensemen, because Alain Vigneault also has no problem with the defensemen joining the rush.
Yeah,
you see Travis Sanheim up front all the time. Phil Myers,
a ton of goals.
Ivan Provorov. So when all that's happening, if you don't have a good goalie, you're going to give up a lot of goals. So you got to trust your goalie, and Alain Vigneault seems to trust Carter Hart enough to, you know, let, and even Brian Elliott to an extent.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Seems to trust them enough to let everyone else play aggressive forechecking hockey, and it's good to see.
Yep,
but
absolutely.
That fourth line, you know, that Nick Obey-Kubel line, the disturbing line, right? That's the kind of line that makes the difference in the playoffs. Because they get under a goalie's skin after three or four games. That's where you put your, you know, your Matt Barnabys, your Sean Averys, your disturbers, right? And you put them down there, and over three, four, five games, you can really get under a team's skin and start affecting performance. Yes,
especially when you're playing the same team every night.
Exactly.
And if you're getting a wash out of the top two lines, yeah, a lot of times the difference is those 7 through 12 guys.
Yep.
That's who makes the difference.
The beautiful part about how this team is constructed is you have defensive aptitude all throughout the lineup. Sean Couturier is a phenomenal shutdown center and has been his entire career. Kevin Hayes on a different line filling the same role. In the bottom six, you have Scott Laughton, you have Michael Roffel, you have Tyler Pitlick. There's defense all over this roster. But there's also much skill.
Yeah, there's also talent all over this roster.
Absolutely.
Touching on a bunch of different guys. I never thought I would have said this sentence yesterday. I don't know if you caught it. Laughton, who had two goals early.
Laughton was fantastic yesterday.
Did you see him get hit with the shot in the hand?
Yes.
Glove went flying off. He grabbed his hand, went to the bench. Same hand that he broke the finger. Yep. I actually said to myself, oh, crap, I hope he's not hurt. Like,
yeah.
I mean, nobody ever wants a Flyer to get hurt, but I never, like, 2 years
you never
ago,
thought you
2 years ago, I'd
be
like,
about
oh,
missing
crap,
Scott Laughton.
I'm concerned that Laughton might not come back. That's how good he's been.
Yeah.
That's how much of a difference I think he's made to this team, and he's found his way, and he's found his role.
And I'll be honest with you, at this point, there's not many players on the team that I wouldn't have that reaction for.
Correct. I mean, Sanheim and his defensive partner, Myers.
Like Myers. Those
two are playing super productive 3 and 4 line
deep. And Phil Myers
terrific.
Phil Myers has straightened the ship in my book because coaching, he was shaky coaching, for a little while.
Coaching. You could yep. see all the little. I'm not saying he's not going to make a mistake again.
No,
he's not
but he had a little bit of a rough patch.
Yeah, and he's cleaning up the mistakes. He's yep. Doing a lot of the little things to protect the puck, a little more anticipation game. So, been terrific. Braun, 3 assists the other night. I mean,
I was about to mention Justin Braun.
Yep.
Because I think he might be the player that I'm the most likely to be like, okay, it's not that big a deal that Justin Braun's hurt. But we saw this team really struggle without him. Yeah.
Considering Ghost is the replacement at this point, I don't want to see Braun go down either.
We do want to mention that Shane Gostisbehere was sent to Lehigh Valley for a conditioning stint. So he will be back with the big club before too long. I believe he can spend somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 weeks in Lehigh Valley.
Right.
But we'll see once he comes up how he looks, if he plays. We'll see. But that being said, I do want to ask you something because it sounds like you're very optimistic this show. Are you starting to believe that this team can make noise in April?
Define make noise.
Win a round.
As the wild card team, no, I still think they go out in the first round. I think it's going to be a super competitive first round, and I give them a chance to win. I don't think they would against either Boston or Washington or Pittsburgh. I think I give us a better chance to beat Pittsburgh than Washington if Pittsburgh wins the division, although I don't know how exactly the seeding works as to who they would play. Well, it depends whether you're 7 or 8 and all that stuff. But if they are if they finish third in the division – right. I absolutely believe they can win a round, even if it is. Okay. Even, I know it's against the same Washington or Pittsburgh team, but it means that whoever's finished second in the division, or if we finish second and they finish third, however that plays out, they're not exactly firing on all cylinders going into the playoffs either. Right. Not that we're not. Hopefully we still are. We just had too far to go to catch the number one, and that's why we finished 2 or 3. So I think they could win a round in that, but. Then I think we go out in the second. I don't think we're quite deep enough yet. But I certainly love the trajectory, and I love where we're headed. And at the end of the day and all of it, look, if Hart has that stellar playoff, anything can happen.
Yeah.
That being said, like I said, where this team is headed talent-wise, another offseason of adding this piece, adding that piece, Carter Hart turning into 22 – and then 23 and 24, the way the math works, I can absolutely see this team over the next 4 to 5 years absolutely being primed and in a position to make cup runs, and we're going to look back on 2020 as the beginning of it all. I really do believe that. I can see this team absolutely headed where we want it to be and where we want it to go.
Well, I hope that's the case, and I would like the record to reflect that I called the Eastern Conference Finals in November.
Yes, you did. It might have been before October. And if they get there, I'll give you all the credit in the world.
And I'm not in any way saying it's going to happen.
No, you said it was going to happen then. So.
Right, but I'm not saying it now as an affirmation of it's definitely going to happen, but I feel... It looks much less ridiculous now than it looked in October.
Yeah, it's much more likely to happen now in February than it was in November. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's put it this way: if you had placed the bet back then, the odds were so good, you're actually going to place a reverse bet to cover your back end. That's how good that bet would look right now. You'd be guaranteeing yourself some money betting the other side.
I think you overwhelmed our listeners with the gambling speak there a little bit.
Okay. Well, if you need an explanation, call me. I'll show you how to make money on the back end.
You can find him on Twitter at MikeFromSJersey.
Yeah, I was actually on this week, and I was talking hockey, and they twisted the call so quickly that they had no idea what they were talking about. They can't talk hockey.
Friend of the show, Jack Fritz, didn't do you any favors. Yeah. This week.
Well, he got me on.
Yeah.
And I go, hey, here's our hockey guy.
But
and
you they, know, Jack, if you listen, you know you could have defended him a little bit better there. You let them get off hockey very, very quickly. You let them off easy, Jack.
It was like a 25-second conversation.
Yep.
Well, but when you don't know what you're talking about.
But you know what? That's why this show exists, and we appreciate all our listeners listening for actual hockey talk.
Correct.
And speaking of hockey talk, Saturday's game. Let's go over it pretty quickly. The Flyers kind of just beat up on a team that they're better than. That's how I read this game. Lawton scored two goals in the first 10 minutes of the game. Coots scored, you know, fairly late into the second. It's a fairly low event game, all things considered.
I'm going to give you a strange take on this game, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to give, of all people, I'm going to give Ron Hextall credit for a game like yesterday. Because forwards to forwards, I think the game was pretty evenly matched. And I think actually Winnipeg might even be a little bit better. Goaltending, Hextall has the right guy in place, and Carter Hart outplayed Hellebuyck.
Yep, I
and
agree with that.
And defensively, 1-6 defensively, especially young defensemen,
we are
way better than Winnipeg, and that's where Hextall, I would say, really gets the credit for a game like yesterday in putting this, you know, Sanheim, Provorov, you know, putting those guys, getting those guys in position, and
for the record, a lot of that's not Winnipeg's fault. The Dustin Byfuglien situation is a complicated situation. They drafted and developed Jacob Trouba, and then as soon as he could, he said he didn't want to play there because he only wanted to play for New York.
Hey, I don't care why Winnipeg doesn't have defense, and we do. We have defense, they don't, and I'm crediting Hextall for that.
I mean, I'm glad for it. You know, it worked out for the Flyers.
He was a
yesterday,
raging, but arrogant, you know, what, and then that's why he's not here anymore. And
but
I get
I loved
that.
Him.
Okay. But he did a good job getting the defense core together, and that's you build from the inside out. And the last pieces that are going to look, you built from the inside out. Like I said, what was the first piece? Hart.
Yep.
Then you built from the inside out.
Sanheim, this one, that one.
Then you know you wait to the end to start building the forwards, and now that's starting to come. And hopefully in this next offseason, like I said, we get another piece or two to the forward position. And then it's Stanley Cup ride as Hart gets older and,
yep.
and physically more intimidating.
And to your point, I said on our first show after the Hextall firing, I said, you know, if the Flyers win the Cup in the next 3 to 5 years, Ron Hextall will have had a lot to do with it, and he won't get the credit he deserves.
He won't get the credit he deserves.
He will not get the credit he deserves.
Because he was a raging a-hole, but that's...
Yeah.
But that's beside the point.
That's the risk you take.
But he certainly deserves. He was more arrogant than an a-hole. But that's very from what I understand, very unapproachable, closed door, never open door. Didn't talk to anybody.
Would you trust Paul Holmgren with your hockey team?
No,
I can't say I blame him.
I'm talking the information that I'm getting. I mean, he wouldn't talk to secretaries. I mean, he just not a nice guy. Just an arrogant guy. And
that's fair.
That's not what he was hired to be.
He's going to make a great assistant GM in Seattle. He really is.
I think he might end up getting the Kings job.
Maybe that's.
I think he might. So. And he's had a lot of success there as the assistant GM, obviously. So I don't think it would be strange for him to get back there.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. If they do, he should get some credit because he's put a lot of pieces in place, for this team in the present.
Well, and another person who might get credit if the Flyers win a cup in the near future would be Chuck Fletcher.
Okay. Absolutely. I thought you were going to go somewhere else with that. I was going to punch you.
And one of the ways Chuck Fletcher can get credit for a Stanley Cup win will be if he makes a move at the trade deadline. The trade deadline is tomorrow.
Yes, let's hit that.
And we have gotten some, we've actually gotten some tweets from our followers at YWT Podcast proposing some trades. And I want to break these down and I want to see what you think of these.
Hit me. Also, just before you, did you see in warmups the other night, I think it was Friday night's game, they pulled Gustafson, the Blackhawks did. They pulled him from the ice in warmups. So they didn't want him to get hurt because they're clearly dealing him. I don't know where he's going to go.
They're selling. He'll go somewhere.
Yeah, he's clearly getting traded.
So friend of the show, Dom, who's been on the show multiple times, didn't really have a question, but he did say, at Dom Console, I'd like to see them add this deadline, but I'm not giving up big prospects. I'd prefer a center, but I'd take any position to get better. I'm intrigued by Kapanen, but you'll probably have to give up something for him. I think Carter is a pipe dream because of the money, and he liked Tyler Toffoli. Tyler Toffoli went to Vancouver, so he's off. Sammy Kapanen Kasperi Kapanen. Whew, that's his father. Kasperi Kapanen.
At least
in
you
Toronto.
Kept it in the family,
right? Former Flyer.
Why would Toronto Why would Toronto be trading him?
They have a lot of depth. And they're looking to address some other needs preferably on defense.
If they're looking for Ghost, absolutely.
Well, I was about to say to you, this is something that I've talked about offline. How much do you have to add to Ghost to get a guy like Kasperi Kapanen? If it's Ghost and a second, I think I consider it. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I think I exhaust all other possibilities, but if it's 3 minutes to the deadline and that's the best deal I can cut, I probably pull the trigger.
I think I probably take it. You add a guy who can help you produce. He's young. He's an RFA. He's under team control forever. He's making a decent little contract right now. He's making $3.2 million right now. This season, he has 35 points in 62 games. Last season, he had 44 points in 78 games. But he's a young, talented, skilled, fast-as-all-get-out winger. And I think he would serve a role. You know, he would serve that burner role.
Is he a right-hand or left-hand shot, do you know?
I can tell you. He is...
He's a right-winger.
Right-handed shot.
Yeah.
He is a right-handed shot. I think he would serve as an excellent complement to this team. He would add some speed. He would add some dimension. He would allow the Flyers to kind of stretch the ice in a way that they don't really have access to now.
Yeah, given his age, I would probably pull the trigger. Again, I would try to see if I could do something more productive with that second rounder.
It might cost more than that.
It might. It
might cost more than that. And I don't know if I would do more than that.
How long is he a restricted free agent for?
I believe he's on a bridge deal this year and next.
So you guarantee you have him for 2 years?
Yeah, you have him. I'm sorry. He's in the first year of a 3-year deal. And he will still be restricted.
So you have 2 more years after this year.
And he will still be a restricted free agent at the end of that deal. So he's still under team control even beyond that. So you're getting him for theoretically a very long time.
Yeah, now I actually definitely pull the trigger. Ghost on a two, I definitely do that. Especially considering he's 23 years old and he's already, already sick. And he's already 6'1", 195 pounds. He can become that 205-pound speedy winger that I'm desperately always looking for.
Right. Now, if Toronto asks for Ghost and you're first, is that too much?
I'd have to know more about what the projected first-round talent is in that spot we would be picking.
The first round this year is very, very, very deep.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'd have to see the quality of player that the Flyers would be getting at 24, 23, or wherever they'd be picking.
Good. A good player. A top 10 guy last year.
Look, I think Ghost is addition by subtraction. Just not having him and his salary around is a plus.
Okay. And you do save a little bit of cap space making that move. You do save now. Yeah, you save about 1.3 going from Ghost's 4.5 to Kapanen's 3.2.
Yeah,
so you do save a little money.
If you think you're going to get a player that's you know what? I do it.
Okay, because, in my mind,
I'm not losing anything in Ghost, and I'm getting rid of his salary. And would I be happy if we got Kapanen in that pick at number one? I'd be thrilled.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
So do it.
How do you feel about Jeff Carter? That one's tough because he's making a lot of money for 3 more years or 2 more years.
2 years after this year.
Yeah, and he's old, and he's making like 8. Plus, I think he's making 8.5.
If you think you have a legitimate chance to win the cup this year,
I don't do it.
That you consider it.
The only reason I do it is if Jeff Carter swears to me he's retiring at the end of the year.
Yeah,
that's the only way.
Well, the cost of getting him here is going to be next to nothing. You're not going to have
yeah,
to. Yeah, because
LA
have
needs
to
dump the money.
Yeah, and there's just anybody who pays in talent and money for him is insane.
Yeah,
there's just no reason to.
I'm sorry, he makes 5.27 for this year and 2 more. So he still makes a lot, but it's not as much as I thought it was.
Would I give up Ghost and a 3 for him? Yeah.
I don't think I would. I would give up Ghost. I don't know if
Ghost
I'd give up Ghost.
Ghost is making almost the same amount of money.
I understand that. And that's why I'd move Ghost. Yeah.
And we could use that forward over that defenseman.
It died. That's what I'm saying. I would do that trade one for one. I don't think I'd add a third to that.
That's a piece.
I think Ghost.
It's a pawn.
Ghost at 26 has more value than Jeff Carter at 35, to me. But either way, the Flyers did miss out on Tyler Toffoli, and I think he would have been a nice piece. But he ended up in Vancouver. Vancouver paid a lot, so.
Yeah, I don't think he's a needle mover. But
no, I agree. Yeah,
but a piece.
We did have one random follower, literally at one random follow, propose the following.
What's up, random?
Okay, so the Flyers, in this deal, the Flyers are acquiring Alex Galchenyuk.
Okay.
It starts as a third-round pick. If the Flyers make the Eastern Conference Finals and Galchenyuk plays 80% of the playoff games, it goes to a second-round pick.
Okay, he's really thought this out.
Yeah, and I think I would do that. That sounds like it makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
If you're not going to add a guy like Kapanen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can't do both. You don't have the room for both, thank God.
I don't think the Flyers could add Galchenyuk right now without moving out salary. That one makes that tough.
Right.
I also don't know why Minnesota would trade him, because I believe he's been... Sorry, did he go to Minnesota? I know he got traded somewhere. But either way, I believe he's been fairly good since he got traded out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, again, if you can get him at that price and with the escalation in the success of the team, yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, and I know
there's no downside, that's for sure. I mean, a third rounder very rarely makes it to the NHL.
Right, and even if it's a second, I think Galchenyuk is good enough that he's going to add some significant value to your team. He's got 3 points in 5 games with the Wild. He is in Minnesota.
Okay.
He only had 17 points in 45 games with Pittsburgh this year, so he was definitely really struggling there.
I don't go more than a three. And you know, look, sometimes you like a Styles can make for a performance. Maybe he blends in better here than he did somewhere else, and he's better here than he was there. But
right. But at the same time, I don't know why Minnesota would trade him, because they're right in the thick of the playoff race, and they just added this guy. And yeah, they just fired their coach and traded away Jason Zucker, but they're right in the playoff race. It's a weird situation in Minnesota.
One of those deals, if they're looking for blue line scoring, maybe that gets it done.
It might be able to, and Minnesota can't score goals to save their life. So, you know, Ghost on the back end might actually help them.
Yeah, they may be looking for, power play boost only in Ghost, and it makes sense for them to make that deal. But yeah, I would deal Ghost for him.
Honestly, I would do Ghost for Galchenyuk pretty close to straight up. I don't know if I would add a pick.
Yeah, I wouldn't add a pick.
To me, it's kind of a change of scenery deal for Ghost.
For both, really.
Well, I mean, Galchenyuk just got his scenery changed, and he's on his fourth team already in his young career. So I think he's gotten plenty of scenery changes.
Yeah, and if three other teams a fourth other team that didn't want him, that would make me a little leery.
Well, teams said the same about Anthony Duclair, and he's had an excellent season. So,
understood.
You know, there are cases where guys can turn it around, but no, I don't think I'd give up much more than Ghost for Alex Galchenyuk, just because you're kind of swapping high risk assets,
right?
And if it works out, great.
Any others?
On that note, our last tweet is from John Margolis at J_Margo23. And he has a very simple message, and I think you'll agree pretty easily. Trade Gostisbehere for anyone, in all caps. Multiple exclamation points.
I wouldn't do it for just anyone. I have no problem if the season plays itself out. He's our seventh defenseman in case somebody gets hurt. What I would tell him in the offseason? And we go and we see what the offseason brings for him and how he comes back.
Yeah. And
he's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger.
Sure. Whatever.
Is there any piece out there that you'd like to see added or that you think might be available that our listeners haven't touched on?
It's really funny.
Kapanen to me is the most interesting guy, and that's the guy I was going to bring up if one of our listeners. Was it Dom?
It was Dom. Yes.
Okay, good job, Dom. Good way to steal my thunder.
You knew you liked him, right?
Absolutely. Of the guys potentially available, I mean, I'd love Mark Scheifele, but he's not available.
Right. I like Kapanen a lot. I'm not sure if Toronto's going to move him because Andreas Johnsson is hurt, and they kind of play a similar role. So it's tough to trade the excess when, you know, the excess is gone.
Would you give up Sanheim or Myers for him?
No.
Me either. Okay.
No.
Look, that's what Toronto, in my mind, that's what they're going to want.
I'm not
sure. They're going to want a significant defensive piece. And I'm not willing to give up that.
I'm not sure if I would give up Travis Sanheim for anything less than an established 30-goal scorer.
Agreed. Agreed.
Maybe a 40-goal scorer. Yep. The price on Travis Sanheim for me is very, very, very high. Phil Myers is not quite as high.
I agree. Straight higher. Value for value, I would give up Myers for Kapanen. But this team and what Myers has meant to this team,
he's been
so
incredible
far,
for this team.
So far, and what I see as potential upside and where he could go given how young he is, defense being so much more important and so much harder to find than offense, I don't make that deal.
If you had to keep one Travis and trade one Travis away, which would you do?
Wow.
Yeah. Connecting your Sanheim.
You do this to me like once a show. You hit me with a question that I'm like, wow, and this is a really great question.
Sophie's choice. One of the Travises must go.
I would begrudgingly trade.
Carted away by Nazis.
I would trade Sanheim first.
Sanheim carted away by Nazis. We heard it here first.
Well, the reason I say that is because I think Konechny is blossoming into not only a scorer and not only has value in a bunch of different ways, and he's an energy guy. I think he's blossoming potentially into even more. I think like one of those character guys that.
I think he's a leader.
Exactly. One of those guys that, you know, shows up at the right moments, is a big player at big moments. I can't wait to see the make a playoff.
Did you see the clip? Did you see the clip of him chirping Savard after they beat the Columbus Blue Jackets in overtime on Thursday night?
Yep.
Just gave him a little F-bomb on the way out. Thanks for coming.
Yep. No, he's got that edge, and I think that edge. And again, I love Sanheim. And I'm only answering the question because you asked it.
I understand. I put you in a tough spot on purpose.
Yeah, it's a great question.
I'm going to put you in a tough spot one more time before the end of this show.
Okay.
Got a surprise for you.
But begrudgingly, it would be Sanheim. Again, because I think Konechny's one of those guys. He's got that Bobby Clark element to him of, you know, just being a difference maker in more ways than just, you know, goals and assists. Just the way he plays the game at right moments, big moments, bringing other people kind of along for the ride. Okay, boys, kind of follow me, kind of way. Yeah.
Yep. I absolutely agree with that, and even
deeper than that, there's core hockey. You know, how do you win hockey games? You know, kind of one on one feeling. And I think Konechny's blossoming with that and how to win hockey games.
I'm gonna say the three magic words: heart and soul.
Yeah,
he's the heart and soul of this team.
He's certainly becoming.
He's getting there. Yep, he's doing what Scott Hartnell did in that 2010 run.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, Mike Richards was the best scorer, or that 2012 run even. He might not have been the best player, but Scott Hartnell was the heart and soul of that team.
Yeah, and I think he's potentially blossoming into even more than that. But the analogy's right on
for now.
But I think he has a potential to be even more than that.
Well, if that's the case, then I can't wait to watch him in postseason hockey.
Correct.
Because we haven't really seen him get a chance to shine. He was playing well when they played Pittsburgh a couple years ago, but he was nowhere near the player.
And nowhere near the confidence level. I think I could see him making a Danny Briere type difference when it matters most.
I could see him scoring a lacrosse goal at some point. He's just got the confidence to pull it off.
Right. Like, again, we don't know until we see it and watch it and it happens.
No,
we don't
whether
know.
He should or not.
We don't know. But I could certainly see he has that makeup.
Out of anybody on the team, he's the guy to try.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. But, so he's the reason why I would trade the other Travis first. But great question.
Okay, well, you know, and fans can let us know about that on Twitter at YWT Podcast. As for other trade deadline acquisitions, it's funny. The Flyers might make Chris Kreider available.
Okay.
If the Flyers beat the snot out of the Rangers on Friday and Sunday, the Rangers might look at that and go, yeah, we're kind of out of it, aren't we?
Well, when's the deadline?
Monday.
This Monday.
I'm sorry, tomorrow. Right. I'm sorry. The deadline's tomorrow. I'm a week behind.
That's okay.
If these games... if the Rangers games were this past week, the Flyers could have.
Right, would have. Right.
Could have, yeah. They did not. Anyway, so the Rangers have to make a decision by tomorrow.
Correct.
They're probably not going to pull the trigger trade Kreider.
If they get the right value for him, they definitely will. They don't think they're making the playoffs.
Right.
And I'm not saying they're going to give up, but if you get a King's Ransom for him, you deal him.
But I doubt they're trading him to the Flyers 4 days before they play two games, you know, in a row against the Flyers. While they're still this close.
If the Flyers call and offer Sanheim, they're dealing him.
I mean, sure.
I know, obviously, that's not happening. I'm just saying.
That just makes the Rangers better for the playoff push. You know what I'm saying.
Right. No, I'm saying unless you get a King's Ransom for him, you don't deal him. But if you do, you deal him.
It's tough to get a guy like Kreider in division anyway. So I don't necessarily think the Rangers are even going to make him available. I think they might think they have a chance, and they might think they're going to try to make a run, which I would love, because I would love for them to just blow assets. That would be great. Either way, I don't think they're making the playoffs.
I don't either, and I don't think they think they are either. So, again, if they get something of significant value, I think they deal them. But they're not going to just deal them for the sake of dealing them, saying, you know, we're not going to make it anyway. Let's trade them. They're not going to do that either.
No, I understand. And I agree with that. But either way, if Kreider was available, I would like the Flyers to pursue Kreider as kind of a cheaper version of adding a guy like Kapanen, you know, somebody who can.
He doesn't have the potential 2023 upside.
No, he's a UFA at the end of the year.
All right.
But we talked earlier about that Obey Kubel line and crashing the net and really making things difficult in a playoff series.
Yeah, and he's a pain in the
butt. That's why you add a guy like Chris Kreider.
Yeah, he's a guy that you just want to punch, no doubt about it.
Exactly. And imagine if Travis Konecny and Chris Kreider are on the ice at the same time for the same team. Do you want to be on the other team?
I hear you. I hear you.
Because they're going to laugh at you, chirp you more.
I do want to be on the other team because I want to punch one of them in the face.
Right. but either way, like, that sounds uncomfortable to play against.
Sure.
And it's not going to happen because, again, I don't think they're going to make him available. But I would love it if the Flyers could add a guy like Chris Kreider at this deadline.
I much more would rather add Kapanen, but he, again, for the right price, Kreider would definitely help.
The NHL posted something on Facebook 45 minutes ago at time of recording. If the playoffs started today, the Flyers would play the Capitals. Pittsburgh would play Carolina. That's really some really good series.
I don't think that's right.
I mean, the NHL posted it 45 minutes ago.
Aren't the Capitals in first place?
No, the Penguins are ahead of them. They have fewer games played.
Oh, they use that? They don't use the total wins? Okay.
No, they use fewer games played. Right,
the standings I saw had the Capitals in first. But okay, yeah. That's...
Boston would play the Islanders. Phew, that's a good one. Tampa, Toronto, St. Louis, Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas.
St. Louis,
Dallas.
Winnipeg would be something.
Colorado, Dallas would be something too.
Yeah, I like Colorado seriously in that one.
Vegas, Arizona.
Did you see what Arizona just did? They scored 9 goals against who'd they play last night? Somebody wouldn't think they scored. Was it Tampa Bay?
Yes. Yeah. They 7.
Seven? Okay. How do you score 7? They don't score 2 goals a game. They score 7 on Vasilevskiy.
The Canucks scored 9 against Boston.
There was the 9 against a good team. I knew there was a 9 against a good team.
Either way.
Yeah, a little bit of a, was it a full moon last night maybe, hopefully?
Maybe.
But yeah, some strange happenings around the NHL last night.
Yeah, either way, we are at the 3-quarter mark of the season. It's time to start coming down the stretch. The trade deadline is tomorrow. There's a lot going on. We'll be here to recap it all for you next week.
And what's the preview? What do we got coming up this week? We have the home and home with the Rangers, but there's a game before that, right? Or no?
Tuesday night, the Flyers play the Sharks.
Sharks, okay.
We talked about that a little bit early in the show. The Sharks might be looking to offload a bunch of their pieces before the deadline tomorrow. They might come in kind of as their AHL team.
When's the first Ranger game?
Friday.
Okay, so
Tuesday, Friday, Sunday.
Okay, yeah, it's 2-0-1 at worst.
That would be the ideal.
I'd be disappointed in anything less.
San Jose, I don't know if you know, also shut down Erik Karlsson for the year.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, I didn't know if you were aware of that.
Not,
Well, before we get out of here, I did promise that I had a tease for you.
Shoot.
So I'm gonna do the plugs first, and then I'll hit this tease, and we'll do that for the rest of the show.
Perfect.
So before we talk about this, make sure that you follow us on Twitter at YWT Podcast. Really helps grow the show, getting our numbers up over there. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SportsTalkPhilly.com, everywhere. Follow Mike Senior at Mike from S Jersey, Mike Junior at Mike _ Giletto, Kevin at Kevin _ Darso. Everybody. Well, that's it. Let's get into this. Okay. Game 7, Stanley Cup Final, overtime. You are the head coach of whatever team is playing in this game. Your player is tripped on a breakaway. Okay. You can pick any player from NHL history to come out and take this penalty shot in Game 7 Stanley Cup Final, overtime.
Right.
Who are you picking, and why is the answer Wayne Gretzky?
It's not Wayne Gretzky.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad that it's not, because I had this debate with some other people.
They don't know what they're talking about.
And my, right. Now, I think Wayne Gretzky is a valid answer.
Sure.
He is the best player of all time. He has more records than he knows what to do with. But in terms of one shot in a shootout to win the Stanley Cup, who are you picking? Player are you picking?
TJ Oshie.
Okay, now why is that? Explain, for people who may not know why, can you explain?
Absolutely. You know how in basketball, 2 points inside the line, 3 points outside the line, so people start shooting more three-pointers because three is more than two?
Yeah.
40% is bigger than 18%. Or 19%, or the guys who are good and go 28%. 40% is higher. TJ Oshie in his career is 40%.
Okay.
40% is such an insane number. It's Babe Ruth and Wayne Gretzky scoring record insane. It's that much better than the next guy. It's 1.5 times what the great player, not good, it's double what the good players do. It's 1.5 times what the great players do. 40% is an insane number. I don't care if you're Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, Phil Esposito, Alex Ovechkin, I don't care who you are, you're not even close to 40% in a shootout. You go TJ Oshie, it's hands down.
You know he's not the highest percentage of all time, right?
No, I don't know that. Who's...
Jonathan Toews for his career is 49%.
How many attempts?
100. Okay. Franz Nielsen has 105 attempts and is 46.7%.
I changed my answer.
I believe, if I'm not incorrect, I believe Pavel Datsyuk is third all time, somewhere in the 48% range.
Well, whoever's the highest number, that's my answer. That's my answer.
See, that's no fun, though. Like, try to...
Why?
Like,
I want to win the Stanley Cup.
Who pulls off the best move? Who dazzles?
That's not your question. If I'm in the stands and it's a February 3rd game and I get to pick one player watch to a penalty shot, then yes, I want to watch. The guy who does the lacrosse goal. Sure, I want to see something crazy.
Sure.
To win the Stanley Cup, I want the 49% guy. The same way I would want Oshie, because I thought Oshie was the highest percentage guy.
I have scored the NHL, or I have, sorted the NHL records. This is just a shootout, by the way. This doesn't include penalty shots. Sorry, I don't think there's a combined list. What do you consider a significant number of shootout attempts? For example, Petteri Nummelin has 10 attempts,
not enough,
but scored on 8 of them.
Yeah, not enough.
Okay. 23?
It's getting there. 46? Anything over 40.
Is 46?
Okay.
So your answer is Vyacheslav Kozlov, who played for the Atlanta Thrashers. He played in 27 games. Took 46 shootout shots. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 27 goals. I'm sorry. 27 goals, took 46 shootout attempts, and was 58.7%.
I'd have to also factor in a little bit of watching the guy play the game to see what, you know, how big his balls are.
Okay.
Okay, because that's it's for the Stanley Cup, so that has to factor in. But at 59%, 100%, he's my guy.
Erik Christensen in 55 attempts was 52.7%. TJ Oshie in 85 attempts is 51.8%.
Okay.
Significantly higher than you thought, even.
Yeah, even higher than I thought, right.
Tyler Seguin, 59 attempts, 50.8%. And then, you know, there's a bunch of guys at 50%, and then it goes from there. But
okay, so my original pick is still my third guy.
Okay, so your answer is just the boring, you know, whoever's got the best number answer.
To win the Stanley Cup, yeah. Yes.
Okay, great. I'm picking Pavel Datsyuk because he's going to do something ridiculous and it's going to look awesome. And not only am I going to win the Stanley Cup, but I'm going to win the Stanley Cup and it's going to look gorgeous.
And he goes 49%, you said?
49.8, yeah.
So you're 10% less likely to win the cup.
Fine.
But because it might look better, you're going to go with it.
Yeah, sure. It's game seven overtime. My team can still win. You still get an offensive zone faceoff after a penalty shot.
Okay. I'll take the 10%.
Well, you can chime in on that debate and let us know what you think at YWT Podcast. And until then, we're going to get out of here. We'll see if the Flyers make any moves by the deadline. Everything will be different next week, and we'll talk about it then. And we'll see you later.